there are introductions that we have to give so that we should ultimately be able to understand
what Rabbi Yehuda Halevi is talking about. I'll keep this out of the way so that I can... I'm not going to let the globe stand in the way of my vision. We can't let the world get in the way of anything. If I put it over here, that's going to be a human eclipse, you understand. I'm on the other side. All right, so we're not going to let that happen. A gold eclipse. Now, make believe, imagine, at the top of this circle, the top of the circle is Eretz Yisrael. Here is Israel. Okay? Now, let's assume furthermore that it is sunset in Israel. Man is standing here and it's sunset in Israel. Now, if it's sunset here, say an hour to the west of us, Cairo. If I could think of a different city, I would have used a different one. I couldn't think of anything. Cairo, that's an hour from here. The sun will set there an hour later. And Libya, I can't think of anything better. The sun is going to set in 2 hours from now. In Eretz Yisrael, it's dark already. But in Libya, there's another 2 hours till sunset. If you keep going a quarter of the way around the globe, quarter of the way around the globe, as we go to the west, it's earlier. All that you have to keep in mind is the following. When it's 9 o'clock in the morning in New York, it's 3 hours earlier in Los Angeles. They're still sleeping in Los Angeles. The further west you go, the earlier it is. Now, if you're in Israel here and it's sunset, 90 degrees further to the west, which comes out just about near Brazil, it's really going to be high noon. It's going to be 6 hours earlier. Now, word of explanation is in place. There are 360 degrees in a circle. Each one of these degrees represents 4 minutes movement of the sun. A total of 24 hours. 360 times 4 minutes, the last time I figured it out, ended up being 24 hours. Now the fact is the following, you know, it could become very, very confusing. The fact is that between here and Beersheba, there's really a difference in time. Between here and Eilat, there's a difference in time. Between here and east or west, either earlier or later. So what did the world do? The world was smart. They went ahead and they divided the world into 24 time zones. Fact is, it's the same time in New York as it is in Cleveland. But Cleveland is 44 minutes further west. So what are you going to do? Every degree on the face of this earth is going to have another time. It's bad enough. There are times that I have to know what the time is here and what's the time in New York. If we would not divide the world into time zones, it would be certifiably a mad world. So what they did was, they divided the world into 24 time zones. Every time zone includes 15 degrees. We said a degree is 4 minutes. 15 times 4 equals 60. And we switch time zones. Okay? Otherwise, we wouldn't survive. The fact is, I don't know which degree, which place is west over here. Those of you sitting in the back of the room are really in a different time zone than I am, because you're further west than I am. So that's what they did. The world went ahead. And it was no more than a few hundred years ago, maybe less, that this was done. Okay? So they took care of one thing, that there are time zones. Even though, of course, the only place where the time zones fall apart is when it comes to Shabbos. So then if you buy the Jewish press in New York, they're going to give you the time that Shabbos begins in New York, in Detroit, in Cleveland, in Chicago. Well, Chicago is already bechlal in a different time zone. All right. Now, we moved from Israel at sunset. And the reason why I begin with sunset in Israel is because, according to Halacha, the Jewish day begins at sunset. And when one of the great contributions of Rabbi Yehuda Halevi is going to be that the first sunset was in Eretz Yisrael 5,764 years ago. The world, time in the world began in Eretz Yisrael when it was sunset in Eretz Yisrael. And at the moment that it was sunset in Eretz Yisrael, in Brazil, it was high noon. Now, if you go another 90 degrees, every 90 degrees, by the way, we, if we say already that 15 degrees is a time zone, 9 degrees, that's an hour, 90 degrees already is a total of 6 hours. So, 6 hours in Hawaii, it's sunrise. In Hawaii, it's sunrise. Another 90 degrees and we're at China. China, it's midnight. Now, listen to the next statement that I'm going to make. When you come back to just 1 inch away from the place that you started, do you know what's happened? 24 hours have passed. So what is it? One silly little centimeter to my east. It's 24 hours later. There has to be a point on the face of this earth where day changes. There are always 2 days going on at the same time. The words of the Kuzri are going to be, and he was certainly in halachic writing, he is the first one to speak of it. Nobody has been able to deal with the international dateline or the halachic dateline without dealing with the Kuzri first. And it's amazing. What he wrote then that would have seemed to be nothing more than sort of Jules Verne's fantasy is daily fare today. People are crossing datelines. What do you mean? Hour after hour. There are flights. People go all over the world. Which means the following. The words in Hebrew in the Kuzri are lo yimalet. There is no way to get out of it. There is no, very good. There is no escaping the fact that there are 2 days going on in the world at the same time. The big question is, where does the day change? Where is it Wednesday and where is it Thursday? The fact is that the nations of the world never got down to dealing with this problem until no more than 100 years ago when they established an international dateline. Because people were already traveling the world, and they also understood what Rabbi Yehuda Halevi had said 700-800 years ago. There must be 2 days going on the face of this earth at the same time. So where's the point? Where is the point? are we going to make the point someplace in middle of New York? Fifth Avenue. On one side of Fifth Avenue, it's Wednesday. And the other side of Fifth Avenue, it's Thursday. Okay? And that would be quite, I would say that would be slightly confusing to say the least. So what did they do? They drew an imaginary line going through the middle of the Pacific. And whenever it comes to an island, it curves around a little bit so that there should be no place on the face of this earth that the line goes through it. And you're going to have, it goes through Main Street, and on one side it's one day, and one side the other day. So they created the international date line that goes down through the middle of the Pacific. If you'll take a look, we can use the map now. On this map, you'll see in the middle, line C is the civil date line. Do you see how that moves around islands? The thin line. It moves around islands so that it avoids any place where there is land. Now, remember, this is imaginary. If you will go to the Pacific and you're going to look for the date line, it's like looking for the green line. You're not going to find... There's no fine line there that you're going to find. But it means that the nations of the world understood that we have to put order in the world. We have to know what day it is where, and we have to have a point at which the day changes. Obviously, even though it's not obvious to everybody, but by the way, if you wanted to, the fact is that you can take these home and you can doodle with it at home and write in Israel, Brazil, Hawaii, China. But this was, just for doodle. Okay? Doodle. As far as halacha is concerned, does halacha accept that dateline? That, of course, has been the great question. The fact is that the question already was one that bothered Jews 110 years ago. We already have one of the Gedolei HaRabbanim, one of the great rabbis who traveled from Auckland, New Zealand, or he started off in Australia, to Auckland, New Zealand, and from there to San Francisco. And he describes his halachic dilemma as he went from one place to the next, because he knew that someplace, he's going to be crossing into another day. Of course, it becomes a problem, certainly with regard to Shabbos. I remember I was a little boy. There are certain things that you push it, remember in your head. It doesn't go on. Who was the guy? There was a fellow who was a very popular writer in the New York Post.
Max Gorman?
Nope.
Rex
Gorman? No. Very popular writer. And I remember I was a little boy, very precocious, of course. I was reading this. Nope. No. Huh? What did she say? No. We can. When I call my wife honey, it means I forgot what her name is. Because she's not here. She's not here. You come. Anyway, since we're not sure, so he wrote in an article there that, hooray, he missed Yom Kippur. He crossed the date line. One side was Erev Yom Kippur, and the other side it was the day after Yom Kippur. Svarta Gan Isaac. No Yom Kippur. I knew something has got to be wrong with this. But I mean, this is great. I'm sure that some tourist organization would say, do you want to not spend Yom Kippur anymore? And they ferry them across from one side of the dateline to the other. And is Yom Kippur, gunish kin Yom Kippur. The question became of great, great significance when the Mir Yeshiva arrived in Japan. They fled from Vilna and they crossed all of Russia through the steppes of Central Asia down to Vladivostok and from Vladivostok to Japan. And we're going to see from Rav Yehuda Halevi, we're going to see China is not a problem. We know precisely what the halacha is in China, so any of you who are planning a summer trip to the Great Wall of China, you can keep Shabbos when it's Shabbos in China. Because Shabbos in China, anything that is to the east of Eretz Yisrael, within a 6-hour radius, is considered subservient to Eretz Yisrael. Pakistan, India, except for certain temples. All of that area, the 6 hours between here and the coastline of China is all considered, that quarter of the globe is considered part of Eretz Yisrael, as far as halach is concerned, according to everybody. Which means that over there you always keep the Shabbos that you would keep in Eretz Yisrael. And even if there are parts of the coast of China that protrude beyond the precise 90 degrees, that's not a problem either. Because, for example, the Chazon Ish said that, let's say you have a landmass like Australia. Now, what happens if part of Australia is on one side of the line and the other part of Australia is the other side of the line? So he says it depends where the majority of Australia is. If Rove of Australia or any landmass is on one side of the dateline, then that's what the halacha it gets. We don't divide a landmass in two, even within halacha, we don't do that. So even if the coastline of China would extend beyond the 6 hour 90 degrees, that would still be considered part of Eretz Yisrael. It's when you're traveling beyond China, depending where you're coming from, here already it becomes a question in halacha. All right. So now I think we're... but I have... It's her globe. It's her globe. And this globe has been waiting here now for a few months to be used. That's right. Got the whole world. So here it is. Of course, you can't see it even up close. This is Eretz Yisrael over here. Mamish, 90 degrees further. Here it is. This is the coastline already into Brazil. This is 90 degrees, one quarter of the globe. You go one quarter further, right over here. Mamish, I need a little. Oh, no, there it is. I got it. One span of my hand, and I've gone from Brazil to Hawaii. There are people here who tell me that Hawaii is very beautiful. Masha was there. We really sent her on a class trip to make sure that Hawaii is really where it's supposed to be. From Hawaii, oh, here's the coast of China. Ilanish, it works out my 4 hand breaths is the whole globe. So, by the way, another extremely important thing that you have to know. The Chover is going to be talking about how the sun moves around the earth. We know that the sun doesn't move around the earth. What we do know is that, first of all, the world moves on this axis, and the world is moving around the sun. World is moving around the sun. That was Copernicus. Copernicus was Mechadish. And to the extent There are indications that our rabbis might have known about that or didn't know, but it makes absolutely no difference in halacha the fact that Rabbi Yehuda Levi is talking about the sun moving around the earth, because all it means is we're talking about how we perceive it. Copernicus didn't make any difference in the world. We continue to talk about sunrise and sunset. There are even those who sing about sunrise and sunset. And the truth is, it's not sunrise and sunset. If you want to become very picky about it, there's no sunrise and no sunset. It's Earth doing something. But it's so much easier to talk about how we perceive it from where we stand. To us it's sunrise and to us it's sunset, and therefore the whole world continues to talk about it, though we know scientifically that that's not the way it works, but it doesn't make any difference. You can keep talking in the way in which you perceive it. Now, there are two things. There's the reality of what's happening. That's one thing. There's a reality. And the reality is that it's the Earth that's moving around the sun. And at the same time that it's moving around the sun, it is also moving on its own axis. And of course, that's going to make the difference between the four seasons of the year, where it's warm, where it's cold, how the sun hits it. All of that is... So that's it, Mamish. And you see... Here on every globe, we have every one of the time zones, 24 time zones, 360 degrees, 1 degree, 4 seconds. Every time zone has 54 minutes. Thank you. Every time zone includes 15 degrees, which is a total of 1 hour. Every quarter of the globe is 6 hours. So therefore, at one and the same time, you have sunrise, noon, sunset, and midnight going on the face of the earth at any one time. Someplace the day has to change. Lo yimolei, there is no escaping. That's a good translation. There is no escaping the fact that there are 2 days going on the face of this earth. The question is, does an international dateline Paskin a shaila for us? Is this how we decide, in other words, the convention, what nations of the world decided, does that therefore pass in a shiloh for us? That's a serious problem. So I say, the problem became more serious when the Miri Yeshiva arrived in Japan, and then the shiloh in those days, it was, you remember there was a day that you sent cables, not telegramot, with little pieces of paper that were pasted on, yeah, you understand? And a guy with a cute little hat would come in and sing for you, right? So there were telegrams going back and forth between the Shiloh was sent to Eretz Yisrael. The Shiloh was sent to Eretz Yisrael, and there were two answers The Chazon Ish gave one answer, and Chazon Ish's answer was, his answer was in Japan. Japan, with regard to fasting, he told them, I think, eat on Wednesday and fast on Thursday, something like that. And then Rav Herzog had gathered together the Rabbanei Eretz Yisrael, and they disagreed with the Chazon Ish, and they sent different instructions to the yeshiva in Japan. And then, since then, there's a tremendous wealth of literature that has been written about the dateline in halacha. But it all starts with one classic text, and that's Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi. So what's fascinating about it is that he thought about it. You know, one has to understand, we learn from this, number one, that the Sefer HaKuzri, and there are other areas, it's not merely, I don't like to use the word merely or only, a book of Hashkafa, a sefer of Jewish thought. There are serious halachic issues that are dealt with. For example, the one that we spoke about earlier in the year, and we learned that yesterday in Chumash, where he paskins that there is a mitzvah, a chiyuv of aliyah. Not everybody throughout history necessarily agreed with him, but he certainly was the one that laid down that foundation, and ultimately the overwhelming majority of poskim, rishonim, and achronim follow the lead of the of Rabbi Yehuda Halevi.
The astronauts.
Oh, that's a completely different problem. Oh, is that a different? Oh, is that a problem? Because, you know, if you go around the world in 96 minutes, you don't have enough time to daven Shacharis, Mincha, and Narev, and still have time to breathe. So therefore, it falls into a different category. But of course, Halacha has dealt with it. And you know, it's fascinating how one can simply... There are texts in the Gemara. Would you have ever thought that the Gemara knew about an astronaut? But the Gemara says that if a person finds himself in a desert and he's lost track of time, so there's a whole formula by which he begins to count 6 days and keep the seventh day as Shabbos, wherever he may be. He's lost on a desert island, that's all. And therefore, here, most probably the astronaut has to keep track of 24-hour periods, because he's not going to have sunrise, sunset. He has nothing. So then it all has to work within blocks of 24 hours. That's how he's supposed to work. All right. I think that we have just about all of the information that we need, and now we can go to the text of the Kuzri. You have it in these two sheets that are stapled together, and it's second essay, number 20. We can start with 19. 19, on page 69. The Kuzari said, you see, because Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, the Chaver, had said that the day starts in Eretz Yisrael. This is where he started talking about the significance of Israel. So the king says, but the beginning of the day starts with China, as it is the easternmost point of civilization. Now, what does it mean it's the easternmost point of civilization? This was much easier to understand in the days of Rav Yehuda Halevi. In the days in B.C., before Columbus. Before Columbus, most of the world was living between the Azores and the coast of China. There was only one half of the globe that was inhabited. What's the epicenter between here and here? You know what's precisely at the center? Eretz Yisrael is right there. Eretz Yisrael is right at the center of civilization. In other words, they were able to talk about Eretz Yisrael being at the center point of civilization without necessarily being chauvinistic or Zionistic. The fact is, you just took a look at where people were living from the coast of Spain or the coast of Africa until the coast of China, smack in the middle. Smack in the middle is Eretz Yisrael. So the king tells him, if we're talking about the beginning of day, day begins in the east, the easternmost end of the inhabited world is China. So what are you telling me that Eretz Yisrael is the beginning of Shabbos? The rabbi said, nevertheless, the first observance of the Sabbath occurred in Sinai. They were given Shabbos. And in Alush, before that, Alush is a place that is mentioned in Parashat Maaseh amongst the journeys of the Jewish people in the desert. There was a place called Alush. That, in fact, is where Shabbos was given. Now, what are the ramifications of the fact that Shabbos started in Midbar Sinai, in the Sinai Desert, in Alush? which is where the man fell for the first time for the Jewish people. It's when the man fell that Shabbos was established, because he said that on Friday you're going to get a double portion. That's where Shabbos begins. It turns out then that after the Sabbath begins, according to us, when does Shabbos begin? It begins with sunset. And if it means the day, history begins at sunset. Vayehi Erev, Vayehi Boker. Begins with Erev and Boker, not from midnight. Which is where the man fell for the first time to the Jewish people. It turns out then that after the Sabbath begins at sunset in the Sinai area, it continues with the setting of the sun to reach all those places that are west of Sinai. In other words, start going. Here is the Sinai desert. It's sunset here and Shabbos begins. Start moving westward. Cairo, it's going to be Shabbos in another place, 20 minutes, 25 minutes. In Algeria, in Tunisia, in Morocco, in the Azores. Shabbos begins in the world at Sinai and keeps going, creeping its way across the world. It turns out then that after the Sabbath begins at sunset in the Sinai area, it continues with the setting of the sun to reach all those places that are west of Sinai until it reaches the farthest point west of the city of the inhabited world. And then it's going to keep going until it comes to the undermost part of the world. By then, and our rabbis knew that the world isn't flat. That's for sure. This is written a few hundred years before Columbus. And Rabbi Yehuda Levi doesn't say that when you've reached the furthermost point of the inhabited world, you're just going to drop down into oblivion, never to be heard from again. No. He understands that it's a circle. The world is a circle. He didn't need an egg. He didn't need nothing. They know that the world is round. So he says, it continues until it reaches the farthest point west. It then reaches the point underneath the land of Israel. Underneath the land of Israel, I like saying this, is Hawaii. That's underneath. That's 180 degrees further. That's under. In other words, imagine that this is the way the world... I mean, it's best even on your page with your... with your circle. In other words, Eretz Yisrael is up here and Hawaii is down here. That's where Hawaii is. It then reaches the point underneath the land of Israel, and then it reaches China, which is the easternmost point of civilization. This is very clear. They're talking about civilization at that time. That's where it is. Here comes the great chidush. The Sabbath then begins in China 18 hours after Israel. This is going to be the famous, I think it was famous, maybe it wasn't, we'll make it famous right now, the Yud Chet Sha'ot, the 18 hours. There's 18 minutes when it comes to baking matzah, and there's 18 hours when it comes to understanding the globe and Shabbos. Hello, what? Chai, yes, that's I think that's very nice. This is so because Israel is known as the center of all civilization. Now, this is about which I say that it's not, it can be chauvinistic, because the Gemara says, of course, that the world developed, God created Har HaBayit first. And from Har HaBayit, the world spread out until it became this. Briat HaOlam began about a kilometer away from here, you understand? So now he says, this is so because Israel is known as the center of all civilization, and so all other lands experience their Sabbath after Israel's. Shabbos begins here. Thus, when the sun sets in Israel, it is midnight of the previous day in China, and when it is noon in Israel, the day is just beginning with sunset in China. That's by the end of China. This 18-hour rotation is the basis for the established science of determining the new month. Here it's going to get a little sticky. It's going to get a little difficult. But you've got what it takes. I meant that. This 18-hour rotation is the basis for the established science of determining the new month, which is based on an 18-hour rotation. You need a few minutes till we understand this. Our sages thus say, if the molad occurs before noon, we may be assured that the new moon will be seen before sunset. This is the one line in the Gemara that has vexed and troubled so many. Nolad kodim chatzos. It's so esoteric the way the Gemara says. Nolad. It's referring to the new moon being born. If it's born before noon, I mean, so immediately what you think of course, is, you know, noon. We're going to see the Meilad, you know, they announce in Shul, the Meilad Adzan, Sein Chalukim, and 15 minutes before noon. I understand. So, can anybody see the Molad before noon? Can anybody see the Molad after noon? So the Gemara says that if it's Nolad, Kodem Chatzos, if the Molad occurs before noon, we may be assured that the new moon will be seen before sunset. When the sages said that the Molad occurs before noon, they referred to the time in Israel when the Molad occurs. I remember I once made it clear to my people in Chutzlaretz, you know, the Molad is going to be such and such. I told them that you have to understand that the Molad they're talking about is not when the new moon begins over West Hempstead or Nassau County. It means when the new moon comes into being over Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, because Ki Mitzion Teitzei Torah, all the Torah of our calendar and everything depends on the horizon over Yerushalayim. So he says the following. When the sages said that the Molad occurs before noon, they refer to the time in Israel when the Molad occurs. This is the region where the Torah was given, and it is where Adam was placed on the Sabbath Eve when he was removed from the Garden of Eden. By the way, when you look at it that way, it's not so bad. I mean, Gresham didn't send him from Gan Eden to Germany or Iraq. He sent him from Gan Eden to Eretz Yisrael, which is Me'ein Gan Eden. Anyway, it is therefore the place where the Sabbaths were first observed by mankind, immediately after the 6 days of creation, and where Adam first started to reckon and give names to the days of the week. As the land outside of Israel became inhabited and the population grew, now do you understand, not only did the world begin from Har HaBayit and expand, that first man spent Shabbos in Yerushalayim. The first Shabbos was spent by him here. And then as the family of man began to grow, they moved outward. By the way, now you understand why it took a few thousand years until Columbus for them to find the other side of the world. Because the fact is that it started here. So, you know, I'm sure when Adam finally, after age 130, had a few children, so, you know, some of them moved away because they had to get a job out of town. The rest of them, they wanted, of course, to stay close so they could have play with the Einikloch. But then as jobs took them a little further, so they moved a little bit further this way, a little bit further that way, more people were born, and the earth began to expand from Eretz Yisrael outward to the east and to the west. And it took a few thousand years until you had a major world population. By the way, coming nowhere close to what the world population is today. The world population today is, I don't know how many times more than what the world population was 1,000 years ago. Even the Jewish population. After the Holocaust, do you know that someplace, I think in the 17th century, there were hardly 1 million Jews in the world? Hardly 1 million Jews in the world. Which means the fact is that the growth of the Jewish people from the 17th century until the 20th century was a phenomenal growth. But remember, there was the Black Plague that wiped out a quarter of the world. And the world wasn't at that point yet that big altogether. I mean, to talk today about 1.3 billion Chinese. 1.3 billion Chinese. What was it? It was in an article yesterday in the paper that if they would not have instituted the one child per family, they would now be 1.6 billion. 1.6 billion. Unbelievable. We don't have a demographic problem. The world has a demographic problem. What are they going to do with all the Chinese? What are they going to do with them all? All right. As the land outside of Israel became inhabited and the population grew, everyone still reckoned the days as Adam had. Here he explains something that he had said earlier that we learned at the beginning of the Kuzri. Why is it that every place on the face of this earth counts 7 days? There has never been a people that had a week of 10 days. Can you imagine what a week that would be? Well, why is it 7 days? Lo Torah nefnata Shabbat. Adam HaRishon natan et zeh. Hu karal liyom rishon b'shabbat, sheni b'shabbat. It was he who gave the 7 days. It was Hashem that told him, you have Shabbos now. Yom HaShvi, Shabbos Vayinov, Yom HaShvi. So the next week it was again Yom HaShvi. And before Cain killed Hevel, he had taught Hevel that there are 7 days half the week. And then of course everybody who came out of that family. Now don't ask me why the prime numbers are 1 to 10, but that also comes only by virtue of the fact that it all started with Omar the Rishon, and most probably because of the 10 fingers that he had. So primary numbers were 10. Everything began that way. So now he says, do not argue. Number 3, you see, Rabbi, in this translation, Rabbi Karapkin has divided this big essay, number 20, he's broken it down into manageable paragraphs. We'll try to do number 3, and then we'll complete the rest next week. We may even have, I can't promise you, and I don't want to disappoint you, but we may have a guest lecturer of about 15-20 minutes, somebody who's been often to Japan and back, and he's going to tell us what he did in Japan. Not everything, just with regard to Shabbos. Just with regard to Shabbos. Because his is a unique story. I don't know if we'll get him. It's Rabbi Kuber. There's a third floor here. Nobody knows the third floor because nobody is allowed up there except on the rare occasions when we can't have class here, so we've had class up there. But then there are the executive offices. The executive offices are off limits to everybody, you understand? To everybody. There are just sanctum sanctorum, that's right, the Holy of Holies. He has his office there. He is the head of Kashrus, the OU head of Kashrus in Israel. He's an amazing source of Kashrus information. An amazing source. And he goes for the OU. He goes to China and Japan. China, Japan, the Philippines. Today, so many of the most basic necessities of all food manufacturing comes from the East. Acerbic acid that's in everything comes from China. You couldn't find it any place.
There are all sorts of major ingredients. We're not even talking about tuna fish. If you eat tuna fish, then there are other things that come from India, but we're not going to talk about that. But there's a whole industry, the food industry, and by the way, therefore, kashrus is so complex today. It's very complex, and he visits a lot of these factories, and he goes a few times a year back and forth, and he has a unique way of dealing with the dateline. Do not argue that Israel is not the starting point of the day by citing those who believe that the beginning of the day starts at noon in the far west. You'll look at the footnote, there were all sorts of different ways of calculating the day. Remember, there are those who start the day at midnight. There were those who started the day at noon. You may argue that at that moment it was sunset in Israel, and so daylight had not yet been exposed to Israel, so that Israel is not the beginning of the day. Furthermore, the first light was created in the west, and it was there that the sun first began rotating. The answer to this argument is that God first created the light above the horizon in Israel, and then immediately caused it to set. Night thus began for the civilized world, and thus did the pattern begin of starting the day with night first, as is consistent with Scripture, Vayihi Erev, Vayivoke, and it was evening, and it was day, and so does the Torah command from evening to evening, shall you observe yourself? May Erev ad Erev tishbetu shabbatchem. It's Erev. Now it seems that there was a creation of the first light, the first great light of the 7 days of creation. The light existed, and then in a sense it disappeared. Chazal say that that great light was set aside for tzaddikim in time to come. There is a special light of creation. So yes, there was light, and then darkness again. It's only on the fourth day, you'll see in Torah, the ma'orot, the sun and the stars and the moon were placed in the heavens on the fourth day, and that was with sunset. That began with sunset, and therefore Torah begins the day with evening, not with midnight, and not with noon. All right, okay. We don't have much more, but to get it all straight and all of its ramifications. But you know, there is a shtickle. Be one more class, and maybe we'll be able to also discuss. There are on the map that you have, and I'd like you to take this all home, and you can play with the. Doodle on the circle, you'll see on the map that there are a number of halachic opinions on the international dateline, which of course creates a certain degree of confusion, but we will, im yirtzeh Hashem, straighten that out. Okay, but save all of your materials and we will, im yirtzeh Hashem, complete the dateline, I hope, next week.